ಆದರ ಶಿವ ಸರಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ
ಪೇಜ್ 10 bottom of the first paragraph. Srila Prabhupada in his purport to verse 25 describes, Lord Bor is everything. He is merciful. He is all knowledge. And he is illusion also. The sound which he vibrated as the Bor incarnation was answered by the Vedic hymns of the great sages and the planets Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka. The highest intellectual and pious living entities live in those planets. And when they heard the extraordinary voice of the Bor, they could understand that the specific sound was vibrated by the Lord and no one else. Therefore, they replied by praying to the Lord with Vedic hymns. Maitreya continued. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again in reply to the Vedic prayers for the great devotees. So he's roared so that they know who he is. Having understood who he is, they've offered prayers. Having offered prayers, then he reciprocates by roaring again, right? So then it all works out nicely, right?
Did he speak to them?
Sorry?
He didn't say a word.
He roared. You know, what do you want? You know? Does that make sense? So that's like, it's not a problem, is it? No, okay. Yeah, because they're just offering prayers, you know, from the Vedas and that. It's not like a dialogue or something. So, because his pastime is going on. So, the Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Because otherwise, who else are they for? It means we're from the material platform, we have this concept that there's material things, but actually there's only spiritual things. But we don't see it that way, that's the illusion. So then of the illusion we can see it in two ways. One is whatever is here that we see is not connected to Krishna, even though it is. Then we see it how we'll gain from it. So that's called karma. And then if our vision is how we can get out of this, right? That's called jnana. So both are mundane platforms. Both are illusory platforms. Because that's not the situation at all. So even the Brahmavadis and that, they're the Brahmavadis are basically, say, is they're basically partially not an illusion, partially are. Right? That's why the four Kumaras are part of Brahma's creation and part of the primary creation. Right, because the transcendentalists are on the Vasudev platform, but at the same time as they have the material forms that they're performing their activities. Mm. Right? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
So then you get the so the idea is that for the devotee, then he sees everything in connection with the Lord. Right? That's what Lord Brahma is saying in his prayers after he stole the cowherd boys and calves, is that the Vrindavan, the Brajavasis, they don't see anything not connected to Krishna. So their homes, their facilities, their families are not an obstacle to their devotional service. Because they only see everything connected to Krishna, how they'll use it for Krishna. So the house is designed because it works for Krishna. So they're only serving Krishna, but they're doing it as householders. Right?
Regarding the four Kumaras, isn't it that actually we're also both part of the primary and secondary?
Yes, yeah. But we're actually the soul is beyond.
Yeah.
But what we're saying is the four Kumaras, because it's a position.
Mm.
So that's part of the primary. Mm. And they're being on the Vasudeva platform, that's part of the primary. But then they're also part of the secondary creation because they're created by Brahma.
Yeah, okay.
Like that. So they're in both. Everybody else is just in Brahma's creation. But the thing is, the soul doesn't belong here, right? But our consciousness is also from this side. That's why we're here.
Yes.
Means you are situated where your consciousness is. Right? So it's just like home is where the heart is.
Yes.
So, you know, location is where the consciousness is.
Yes.
So you don't have to be in the spiritual world to be in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't have to be in hell to be in hell. Right? You know.
And even if you are in the spiritual world, you're not necessarily there.
No. Like we see the demons, they're in the spiritual world, but they're not there. They're in the material world. Like that. So this is the things that we can deal with in our philosophy very nicely. Others then doesn't work as well. I mean, they'll deal with it, but it won't be a major point. Because for us, this achinta veda veda tattva aspect then becomes very important because that's simultaneous aspects. Right? It brings out that greater sweetness. Because if there's difference, there's God and there's a living entity. Right, there's God, there's his opulence, you know, so all these things. But for us, it's just the Lord and the devotees, because that non-difference. Affection means there's a non-difference. That to have affection, there has to be two of you. Right? That makes sense. It's just like, generally it's only when you're looking in the mirror then that natural affection for yourself arises within the heart, right? If there's no mirror, you don't necessarily think about it, right? Because there's only one. But when there's two, then you can say, wow, hey.
Looking good.
Yeah, yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I remember something noticed. It was I forget who it was, somebody pointed it out. I don't know if it was the shop owner, or it was somebody who was watching in Poland, because they go out with these huge Harinams, you know, every day. They go out for hours. And if they're in one place, they always do the same circuit every day, you know? And so somebody noted that when they're walking down the street, everyone's absorbed in the kirtan. Mm. But as soon as they walk by a store that has reflective glass, then everyone's there adjusting everything, checking everything and all that. So they thought it was funny. So they mentioned it, I think, to somebody, either to Sri Pallad or to Indadunga Maharaj or like that. So, yeah, see?
Priorities.
Sorry?
Priorities.
Yes, yes. Okay, so we understood the prayers were for him, Srila Prabhupada explains. The breathing from the nostril of Brahma caused the appearance of Lord Bor, and therefore the Bor incarnation of the Lord is the personified Vedas. The glorification of the intellect, because the Lord, the breathing of the Lord is the Veda. He's given that Veda to Brahma. Brahma's breathing, therefore, is the Veda, and then the Lord comes from the breath of the Veda. He is the personified Vedas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The glorification of the incarnation by the sages on the higher planets consisted of factual Vedic hymns. Right? They were using the hymns themselves, because the hymns themselves are describing the glories of the Lord. Right? Otherwise, someone could say, well, you know, if they're offering prayers to the Lord, they weren't using the Vedic hymns. They would be using some. They would either be making the prayers themselves, or it would be some smriti. Right? You know, some Puranic or like this. It wouldn't be Shruti. But Prabhupada's pointing out, no, it was directly Shruti.
Yeah.
It was the direct Vedas themselves, because the Veda is just glorifying Vishnu. Right? Madhvacharya makes that point. Even if you're talking about the prayer seems to be to Indra that, but it's to Krishna, because Krishna is the Indra. He is the life force. You know, life breath is Vayu. He is, you know, the judgment. Like we were just reading that the Yamadutas are saying that Yamaraj is like Brahma in that he's in touch with the Supersoul. Right? Because Brahma lives with the Supersoul, the thousand-headed Supersoul. And like that, so he can converse with them. So Yamaraj is on that platform, he can converse with the Supersoul. So therefore they discuss what it is that the person's done and what they deserve. What would be their next birth, what would be everything like that. Then being able to understand this, then Yamaraj then pronounces, okay, this is what's happening. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Why would we say that they necessarily they offered prayers from the Vedas and not from Smriti? Why would somebody say that?
Because the smartest will say that the Vedas are all, if the words are used as Vishnu, they're about Vishnu. But if they're saying Indra or Ganesh or someone else, they're about them. It's not about Vishnu. So we're making the point is that all Vedic hymns are only about Vishnu. Right? Because everybody is only holding an office, you know, for. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you could say the president or the prime minister, you know, the chancellor, whatever it is, represents the country. Because all governance technically is representing him. It's his potency. Does that make sense? Yeah. Whenever there's glorification of the Lord, it's to be understood that Vedic mantras are being rightly vibrated. The Lord was therefore pleased when such Vedic mantras were chanted, and to encourage his pure devotees, he roared once more and entered the water to rescue the submerged earth. But then also you can check anything that's within the Vedic purview that Vyasadeva's put together, or that's in pursuance of the Vedic version, then that's all about the Lord. So that's what they're for. So when you use the mantras, it's to glorify the Lord, then it's proper. Other things are not important.
Right. The prayers of the acharyas would be considered smriti?
They would be smriti. But because they're in pursuance of the point that's made in the Shruti, therefore they're non-different. That's why the Puranas are considered the fifth Veda. Does that make sense? So these commentaries by the Acharyas, this is also part of the fifth Veda. Is that, before entering the water to rescue the earth, these points come up because there are people who say these things. You know, the impersonalists are there, and they generally say all these things. Because right? They just get caught. It's interesting. Even though they're not interested in what's going on here, they're interested in liberation. They're totally into the rules.
Yeah.
Right? It's an interesting combination how it always works out. You know, and you know, it's just like the kid who cannot keep anything in his room in the right place, but he's very particular about his morning cereal and how he wants it. You know, you put the cereal first, then the milk, or the milk, then the cereal. When do you put in the bananas? When do you put the sugar? It's exactly, if it's not like that, he freaks out. But his room looks like, you know, a bomb hit it. You know, that's on a good day. You know, they've been, you know, how you say, you know, they just said it was Bikini Atoll just to, you know, for the propaganda, but actually it happened in the guy's room. You know, so. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. Right, so you can see the mood is there.
Yes.
His very glance was luminous, and he scattered clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. He was personally the supreme Lord Vishnu, and was therefore transcendental. Yet, because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. Right, so he does things within whatever is the species he's functioning. You know, because that's the fun.
Yeah.
Right? For him, it's variety. For us, it's, you know, we're kind of stuck. he doesn't have to smell, but he does. But
why not,
the pig has to smell. He doesn't have an alternative, right? You know, it's not like you see, you get out there with the French guy's got the wild boar, and he's going out into the forest, and then they gets to a particular place, and then the boar stops, and what's happening? Boar pulls out his little, you know, thing, turns it on and all that, and goes, I think there's some truffles here. And then he goes in. Yeah, so it's no, he just does it by smell. Right? Yeah. Okay. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devotee brahmanas engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water. Diving into the water like a great mountain, Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Right, so you can see the original form of this, yeah. So it's a natural pastime, right? O Lord of all sacrifices, please do... Okay. Lord Boar penetrated the water with his hooves, which were sharp like arrows, and found the limits of the ocean, although it was unlimited. Because it's produced from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, this ocean. Therefore, it's unlimited. Right? Even though we'll say it's within 2 billion miles, but it's still unlimited. That's the fun part, is because Krishna's energies, any energy can function in any space. Right? Yeah. Because here's, for us, the all-accommodating potency only accommodates so much. But for Krishna, she accommodates unlimited. Therefore, Braj is unlimited. Right? Yeah. It means the effect that it feels that it's only, what is it? 84... What is it?
Square miles.
84 square miles. How many kroshas is that? It's always something, it's a standard number. I don't remember. But, it's, 84 square miles. Just like Dwarka is said to be 10 by 10. But at the same time, as then Prabhupada mentions that the wall, or no, what's his name? Sanatana Goswami, the wall was 100 miles long.
Yeah.
Right? You go 10, 10, 10, 10, that's 40, but the wall was 100.
Yeah.
And inside, it's unlimited.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, academics have problems with these things. Because the all-accommodating potency accommodates according to how much you want. Right? You know, 100-mile wall, that has some feeling to it. You feel something's happening, right? You know?
Yeah.
Somebody said, there's big walls all over the world. But why is the Chinese wall famous?
Great.
Because?
Long.
It's long, right? There's walls that are that thick or thicker and have better, you know, fortressing on it. Like that, because it's a little bit, you know, space, because you expect a bunch of guys on little dinky ponies riding along and yelling and screaming, so therefore it's good enough. Right? But you see sometimes in Europe and other places, they build walls for, you know, full-on wars. You know, so they're much more substantial as walls. But they're short, so nobody, they'll think of it as a fort. But this is because it's long, so does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the 100 miles long, it has a flavor to it.
So, there's the Kala Chakra, who's kind of dealing with time compared to eternity.
Yes.
So, is there something similar going on with space?
It's eternal time,
yeah.
But within the material world, material time functions in a limited fashion.
Yeah. So, is there something similar going on with space?
Same, because time and space go together.
Yeah,
okay. How do you have time unless there's space? And space means, what's the point of space unless there's time?
Yeah.
You know, so the two go together. They're just two aspects of one thing. Right? Does that make sense? Because there's Krishna and there's Balaram. Krishna is the taking care of the Ladini. Right? Balaram takes care of Sambit and Sandini. So Sambit and Sandini are two aspects of one thing. So one is time, one is space. Right? So Sambit is time, Ladini will have space. I mean, Sandini will have space.
Yeah.
Right? They go together. So it's one person, it's just two aspects of one person.
Yeah.
Right, and then to create the aspect of that affection, then that's the third aspect of the Yoga Maya. You understand? So Yoga Maya has all these three aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But why are they there? They're there to accommodate the place and pastime between Radha and Krishna.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's Radharani. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why Swarup Shakti is known as Yoga Maya and as Radharani.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, just like Krishna, because it's only him, but he expands his Balaram, who expands his Vasudeva to take care of these things. Does that make sense? So the position of time and space is in Sambandha, right, in Vasudeva, but the effect of it is in Abhideya. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay.
It's always one of those.
From part link.
Everybody's wondering, what is he talking about? Okay. You know, I catch some of the words. I've heard the words before. Okay. But because he's the unlimited Lord, he can find the limit of unlimited. And then again, it's unlimited.
Mm.
You know, that's the whole point. That's why this whole point is, okay, then God created the material world, you know, okay, but who created God? This doesn't apply, because he is himself, that's just who he is.
He is existence.
He is existence. So it's not, because otherwise, then who you'd have to say who created, they'd just go on. But nobody, no scientist ever does that. They stop at one point. Otherwise, you can't have a theory.
Yes.
You know? So they also stop, they just stop thinking, that's all. or either maybe they didn't start Chakti, but whatever it is, you know, just. He saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the middle of creation, and lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Lord Bor very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Then, his anger glowing like the Sudarshan wheel, he immediately killed the demon Hiranyaksha, although he tried to fight the Lord. Right, because, you know, there was somehow or another a dispute over the concept of ownership. Yeah. Thereupon, Lord Bor killed the demon within the water, just as the lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon, just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging in the purple earth. When the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white... Then the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion like that of a tamal tree, and thus the sages, headed by Brahma, could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and offered respectful obeisances unto him. Verses 27-33. Because up to now, then he's been taking whatever the form is, as we'll see, the whitish or the reddish. So the first part he's describing the white, and the second part he's describing the red. Mm-hmm. Right? Or the other way around. No, he was red when he killed Hiranyaksha, I think. Or was it the other way around? It's described. It's coming up. So we'll don't have to get an anxiety for his color. Right? But here he assumed a bluish color so that they could understand that he's Vishnu, just to add to that flavor. Does that make sense? But also we see is that Lord takes on that bluish flavor because now the earth being there, now the fruit of activities of the living entities can take place. So that combined aggregate of the living entities wanting to do that, then the Lord takes on the bluish color because the living entities are in the mode of ignorance to take on that mood. Right? There has to be a basis of ignorance that you would even have a desire for passion directed at the material world. Right? Because Vasudeva Sattva means it's only goodness. Right? This is moving too fast. This is based on 4 previous years. So, you know, what's it going to be like in the 12th year?
Yeah.
We're going to be thinking we're speaking in like a foreign language or something.
I remember once in a while in the beginning, I was thinking, I have no idea what he's talking about, but it's amazing. I love it.
No, I had that when I was hearing Vidai Nandamarsh. When I first went and heard him speaking, you know, he was giving a lecture and he was talking about the 4 yugas and you know, the Gaudiya. I didn't know what he was talking about, but it made perfect sense. It was so logical. And I was just thinking, wow, this is
appreciating it.
This is great, but I don't know what he's talking about. That with Bir Krishnamurti is Halava.
Oh,
that combination was good. Yeah, perfect combination. Okay. So you have that aspect also, but here he's taking it on not because of the living, but it's in connection with that because the earth is out, but at the same time it's about relating with the sages. Because it's not that, he's already done that with Brahma. Right? Taking on that bluish color because the living entities being in the mode of ignorance, influenced by ignorance, so therefore the mode of ignorance has that bluish reddish color. So he takes on that bluish color. Then the lotus is coming from the navel, and then that lotus is the manifestation of, you could say, the differences between Hiranyagarbha, which is that primary aspect of creation, but it's only situated in sattva, right? But now you have that same thing, which in its gross form means now there's the aspect of rajas, right? So that's now it's gross. It's not sattvic, it's dropped down into the modes. And to have that, you have to be in ignorance. Yeah. Right? So therefore, that's virat. So the lotus, that's virat. Right? It's the gross form of the primary creation. Yeah. Then that's in the lotus, and Brahma, appreciating and seeing that, how the universe looks, then he creates what we see here. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you look at the tree and then you paint it on your canvas.
Yeah.
So he's looking at what is the construction of the universe within the lotus. You know, it's the primary creation, but the gross form, so it can be appreciated. Then he's building. Yes. Does this make sense?
Yes.
So that aspect there, then the Lord takes on that aspect. But he's naturally that from before, but that's not because of ignorance. That's his yoga maya.
Yeah.
Right there. Here, the effect is Mahamaya. So it binds us. There it's doesn't. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Previously, the sages already offered their glorification and understood him to be the Lord. So he roared twice, and here it's again, they understood him to be the Lord.
It's coming in the next paragraph.
Somebody has to ask the question before we get there. You know, just keep us on our toes. Like, you know, it shows us thinking, because otherwise, why would you come up with it? But that's the interesting thing, is that. That's the point, is that the natural form is the conversation, because the conversation going how it's going and the description, it naturally brings up those questions. And having brought up that question, then that naturally gives rise to the next point I'll say. So it's good.
I don't feel like it.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport to verse 33, explains that the sage Maitreya amalgamated both the boar incarnations in different devastations and summarized them in his description to Vidura. His entire purport to verse 33 gives full details. So it's not an uncommon thing to take all the activities of the Lord in one thing and put them all together. So you understand, it's not wrong. Sometimes, no, but this happened here, that happened there. The point is it's one person, and it's just every time he does it, it's something different.
Yes.
You know? So
the purpose is to get us back to Godhead, not history class.
Yeah, it's about remembering the Lord. Like, let's say I'm talking about someone's cooking, and this time they cook this, this time they cook. Yeah, they cook this, they cook that, they cook. It may not have been one meal, but the point is that's the repertoire, you know. So then, it's.
Yeah.
In the Sweta Varaha Kalpa, first day in the first month of the 51st day of Brahma's life, got that?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the reason that there's a difference between the two 50s, because it seems that there's something special again on that first day when you start again, right? Other than it's just the first day and then 100 years, there's the first day, then 50 years, then the first day and another 50 years. Right? It gives more variety. Right? Now you can, you know, you always wanted to do it over again. Now you can, you know, but now you have the maturity and that thing. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. At the beginning of the Swayambhuva Manvantara, Sweta Varaha, white in color, appeared from the nostril of Brahma and lifted up the earth. Then he disappeared. In the sixth Chakshusha Manvantara, when there is a sudden deluge, Nila Varaha, black in color, appeared in the water, lifted the earth, and killed Hiranyaksha in the present section. In the present section, Maitreya combines both appearances in his narration. This can be understood from the explanatory verses of Laghu Bhagavatamrita 1.3.10.19. The boar avatar appeared twice. First in the Swayambhuva Manvantara from Brahma's nostril in order to lift the earth, and a second time during the Chakshusha Manvantara appearing from the water. The boar with tusks assumed the four-legged animal form to kill Hiranyaksha and lift the earth. According to some authorities, however, this form is half man and half boar. Okay. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. Which is means the first one. Then we understand he was fully boar, but the second one, who he's killing her on Yaksha, he may be fully boar or half man, half boar. It doesn't really matter.
So for us, this is this tendency to want a mechanical answer or this problem.
Yes, because that, as we were discussing yesterday, that we're actually bringing down to the Brahman platform. It's not about the Lord and his pastime, so it doesn't matter. You know, it's like Krishna dresses nicely to impress the devotees, But then we get into the mechanics of why this and that and this with this and last time he did that and that. You know, it's, you were missing the whole point of the flavor between the devotees. Sometimes the boar avatar is black like a cloud, and sometimes it's white like the moon. The form of sacrifice, he is very strong, endowed with these two colors. It is stated in scriptures that Hiranyaksha was born through Daksha, who was the son of the Prachetas during the reign of Chakshushamana. Thus, the appearance of the boar avatar during the reign of Chakshushamanu is confirmed by the information about the birth of Daksha during that time. Daksha, you know, a few personalities, they always get in trouble, either, you know, by their own or by somehow another, and they end up having to take another body again. You know, so Daksha is one of them. Right? Bhrigu also ends up in, you know, a soup a bit, because forget who he had that trouble with. And so he's born from Varuna, but originally he's the son of Brahma. Right? So Daksha, also being a son of Brahma, then somehow his body gets destroyed, so he has to take birth again. So here he takes birth from the Prachetas. Daksha's daughter was Diti. Hiranyaksha was the son of Diti. At the beginning of the first kalpa of Brahma, Swayambhuva had produced no sons. Thus, the Prachetas, Daksha, Diti, and Hiranyaksha could not have existed then. The truth has been discerned in this way. Right? So they're making a difference between that Padmakalpa in the second half of the lifetime of Brahma on the first day, and then what's happening in that first day in the Brahmakalpa. Right? So the Brahmakalpa is the, from what I understand here, is the first day of the first 50 years, and the Padmakalpa is the first day of the second 50 years.
Yeah. Okay? So this description that we have now, it's about Brahmakalpa. It's the first day of his life.
There's that, but no, he's pointing out from the in the first day of the second half. Yeah, it's mixed. That's what he's pointing out, is that he's mixed two stories. Okay. Thus, Maitreya, being asked by Vidura, narrated the activities of both appearances of Varaha in one story. It is mentioned in the Matsya Purana that there was a pralaya during Swayambhuva's period because of curse of a sage upon Swayambhuva. It is mentioned in the Vishnu Dharmottara that by the will of the Lord there is a sudden deluge during the reign of Chakshushamana. Right? Therefore the whole, you know, Matsya avatar and getting out the boat and doing the whole thing. Right? Like that. But it seems that he missed out on the tent and the blanket. Like that. So he seems to have been in a better shape here. Okay. Anuvakyas are Vedic prayers. They praised him with prayers similar to those. Anuvakyas. So the Anuvakyas are the smaller stories. It means you have the Puranic stories, which is the general, you know, you're describing, you know, the whole creation. The primary, the secondary, then the Manus, the kings, the Prajapatis. Right? So it's very big. And it will, you know, give some detail, but it's not a lot of detail. It may have some detail here, but not somewhere else. Right, that's the Puranic. And Itihas then takes one personality and describes more detail. Right, the Anuvakyas, they take and get right into real detail of what happened in the very specific, you know, situation, like the detail of the conversation or what they were wearing or, you know, that kind of. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So those who are very well studied, they know all three. So they can put all three together, and depending upon the situation, the audience, the question, bring out detail from any of these. So the detail may have already been explained in the Purana, that's fine. Or maybe you bring it in from the Itihas or from the Anuvakya. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Like Atmatattva?
Because he knew these Anuvakyas. Like that, because there's 90 of them. Like that, or the authorized Anuvakyas. But most people, you know, you don't hear about that, you know, Penguin has translated them or something. They're not like a popular work. So they're in Sanskrit. So those people, because when he was young, there in their village, there was a Brahmin who, he was a Puranika. So he knew, you know, all three of them. So he would come and every night tell the stories to the kids. So all the kids would get together in somebody's house, you know, and the, you know, they, everybody gets some kind of snack, and then he'd tell the stories. And then when they all fall asleep, then the moms would take them off back to their houses. You know, that was just the method. So since he's, you know, small, he's been hearing all these stories and all putting together, and that's that comes up as a difficulty, because if you can't quote where it's from, then people may doubt. Well, where is this from? Mm. So that's a problem. Yeah. But they're there. So probably, as Vishwanath's pointing out here, the Anuvakyas describe all these fine details. So then, yeah. Does that make sense? Nice. Yeah. Verses 34 to 45. The sages further glorify Lord Bor. The sages offered prayers to Varaha, the Lord's Bor incarnation, understanding him to be the supreme personality of Godhead and the worshipable object within sacrifice. It's starting to get cold enough, you have to cover more. This is that creeping little... Like, there's no breeze, but it's somehow or another, it exists.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's just, it moves. Oh, it means if there's no fog, you don't get it.
No, because it's all...
Okay. Yeah, okay. Okay. Okay, quote, all the sages uttered with great respect, O conqueror, O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, all glories and all victories unto you. You are moving in your form of the personified Vedas, and in the hair holes of your body, the oceans are submerged. And so the whole ocean can fit in just one hair hole, right? So you have a lot of those. So. Yeah. For certain reasons, to uplift the earth, you have now assumed the form of a boar. O Lord, your form is worshipable by performances of sacrifice. But souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri and others, are in the touch of your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kusa grass. And it's also said when he came out of the water, then he shook, so that water that came off the tips of the hairs, where it landed, kusa grass grew. That's why kusa is always used in sacrifice, because he's the Lord of sacrifice. Like that. In your eyes is the clarified butter, and in your four legs are the four kinds of fruit of activities. O Lord, your tongue is a plate of sacrifice. Your nostril is another plate of sacrifice. In your belly is the eating place of sacrifice. And another plate of sacrifice is the holes of your ears. In other words, all the places of that, that you're offering something to the Lord and that the Lord accepts that offering through. So those are all plates of sacrifice. In your belly is the eating plate of sacrifice. And another plate of sacrifice is the holes of your ears. In your mouth is the Brahma plate of sacrifice. Your throat is the plate of sacrifice known as soma. Right? Because basically, if you only drink one drop, that's as far as it gets. Right?
Yeah.
Your, but also, it's that, that's the brahminical, like that. If you just touch it to your lips, like you don't know what you're doing with achman, if at least you touch your lips, you're purified. Then more of that, you get it in your mouth. You know, it gets to the back of your throat. But the Brahmins, because they know properly how to do it, are always doing it. And then when they, the same amount of water, when they sip it, it gets down to the heart. Mm. Right? So it gets to the throat. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It'll never get to the stomach. But you know. Except maybe on fast days. Right? Remember one Brahmacharya, he had this monster, this big achman cup, the South Indian ones, you know, big spoon. I mean, you know, it's, you know, one spoon must have been, I don't know, 30 mLs or something, you know, like that. And then, you know, he really liked his achman cup on Ekadasi, right? On Nirjala Ekadasi in these fast days. Because you have to do achman. He's doing puja. He does lots of achman. So. You know, it had advantage. I was wondering, why so big, you know? And then he explained it, and okay. And whatever you chew is known as Agnihotra, because right? The fire then then eats all the offerings. Moreover, O Lord, the repetition of your appearance is the desire for all kinds of initiation. Right? Because through initiation, the Lord appears. Right? You have that connection to the Lord. Mm-hmm. Your neck is the place for three desires, right? Because he has those three lines. And your tusks are the result of initiation and the end of all desires. Your tongue is the prior activities of initiation. Okay. Your head is the fire without sacrifice, as well as the fire of worship. And your living forces are the aggregate of all desires. O Lord, your semen is the fire, is the sacrifice called Soma Yajna. Your growth is the ritualistic performances of the morning. Your skin and touch sensations are the seven elements of the Agni Stoma sacrifice. Your bodily joints are symbols of various other sacrifices performed in 12 days. Therefore, you are the object of all sacrifices called Soma and Asoma. You are bound by yajnas only. O Lord, you are the supreme, right? So unless you're performing yajna, you can't in any way catch the attention of the Lord. Right? That's the only way you can catch his attention. O Lord, you are the supreme personality of Godhead and are worshipable by universal prayers, Vedic hymns, and sacrificial ingredients. We offer our obeisances unto you. You can be realized by the pure mind, free from all visible and invisible material contamination. Right? So that's where Krishna will reveal himself. Because if the mind is already contaminated with something else, what's the point of revelation? Right? Because it won't fit. You're already busy with something else. Even though you know something's right, you don't do it because the mind is already focused on something else. So when the mind is free from all visible and invisible material contaminations, then that's where you get full realization. So to that degree that is freed, to that degree you have realization. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're 1% freed, you get 1% realization. Right? So it's good, right? You don't have to wait for 100%. If you did, we'd be in trouble. Right? Yeah. Is that? Yeah. So visible and invisible. Because the visible is what we are aware of. Invisible is what we're not. Does that make sense? Yeah. Or visible is what others are aware of, and invisible is only what we're aware of. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We offer our respectful obeisances to you as the supreme spiritual master of knowledge and devotional service. 34 to 39. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments. Though you are the form of all causes on the path of karma or sacrifice, by inaugurating all of its aspects by your pastime, by bhakti devoid of desire for the results of karma, one can realize you. Right? So he's the cause of all sacrifice. And any benefit anybody's going to get is going to come from sacrifice. Right? Everything is sacrifice. When that's there's benefit. Right? But if you want to realize the Lord, that can only be done through bhakti. You know, that's what came up in yesterday's discussion, is that people are using devotion and other things like that, but it's not called bhakti as such because its point is not to please Krishna in a favorable way. Or, yeah, I guess, pleasing and favorable the same. Right? But it's not there to please Krishna. It's there to please themselves. Is that something? You know, it's like using something of the deities for yourself. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we don't recognize it as such. We only bring it out that it's just like, let's say you're in the temple. Is there anything else other than the deities? No. So if you use the temple for something for yourself, then you're getting the benefit, but because there's only the temple. But it's the wrong application of the temple. So therefore, for the karmis and jnanis using bhakti to get karma and jnan, that's the wrong application. But it's the only application because there isn't anything else. So it's not that there's an alternative. So therefore, then the actual position has changed the consciousness so you understand it as it belongs to the temple, so therefore use it to please Krishna. We're not saying don't use it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So one has a house, or one has a room in the temple. So is it a problem that it's a room? That's the Maya? No, it's that we think it's our rule, and it's for us. But we understand it's for Krishna. Right? Then it works.
Yeah. So, does that mean when you're making offenses, you're using your devotion to kill your devotion? Or how does that
work? I mean, you're very devoted to criticizing others.
That's it, yeah.
He spends a lot of time thinking about it and absorbing it.
Yeah, I mean...
You could say that, but you would be talking about the negative there.
Yeah.
You know, you use the darkness to destroy the light, but you can't really destroy the light. No. It's just because of darkness, therefore, the light goes away.
Because sometimes, if devotees were philosophically deviating or making offenses, Prabhupada would kind of remove them from making those... era. So then how do they actually come back?
By using it properly.
Okay.
Because the point is, anywhere you are in the world, you can be engaged in devotional service.
Mm.
Best is in the association of devotees, but if you're not taking advantage of that, or even worse, you're disturbing that, then better you're somewhere else. Right? Not taking advantage, as long as it doesn't bother anybody, that can go on.
Mm.
But if you're actually disturbing, then better you go somewhere else until such time as you're not disturbing.
And that will come from more gross reactions or whatever. I mean...
It means that one would be in that position.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just have to be careful of your desires.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By bhakti, with no desires for material results, vairagya, one conquers the mind, atmajaya, and by that one develops knowledge of you. Right? So it's not the technical process, it's that's the process the Lord's expecting. Right? That's how you please Him. Because He only purely thinks of things in connection with the devotees. Right? So therefore, we should only be thinking of things purely in connection with Him. That makes sense. Yeah. So then that's why the process works. But the process is given so that we know how it goes through. You should give knowledge by which we can attain you, as it is said in the Gita. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. I give intelligence by which you can realize me. Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Right? So this was at the... We're in the 28th cycle of the Kali Yugas, and so this is on the first day, you know, within the first cycle, right? Like I said, we're in the seventh month, right? So this would have been in the first, right? So there's a bit of difference. We're halfway through, and so the point is that you could say that that's, you know, millions of years before the Gita was spoken now. So the point is that Gita is always there. Right? It's an eternal literature. It's just at certain times it's revealed. But, you know, these sages, you know, because they're basically there for the lifetime of Brahma, or at least a good amount of time, so they don't forget it from the last time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, The mom remembers about the kid cleaning the room later in the day, even though the kid forgot while she was explaining it. Like that. Therefore, the greater position. Right? The sages continued, O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves, sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. O Lord, as the peaks of great mountains become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the earth on the edge of your tusks. O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and non-moving, this earth is your wife. And you are the Supreme Father. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, along with Mother Earth, in whom you have invested your own potency, just as an expert sacrificer puts fire in the Aratni wood. 40-42. Srila Prabhupada glorifies the appearance of the Lord and the Mother Earth in this purport of verse 42. the so-called law of gravitation, which sustains the planets, is described herein as the potency of the Lord. This potency is invested by the Lord in the way that an expert sacrificial Brahmin puts fire in the Aratni wood by the potency of Vedic mantras. By this arrangement, the world becomes habitable for both the moving and non-moving creatures, right? Because if there wasn't gravity, really hard to do things. You know, it'd be hard to get to your house because your house isn't, it keeps moving, right? You know, keep any furniture in the house. So if you could get it inside, it just float around the room. You know, I mean, it might be the advantage because then you're sitting there on the couch and the remote is floating on the other side of the room. But if you wait long enough, it'll eventually come around to where you are, right? You know, so then it could have its advantages if you're patient, right?
By that time, you might be moving somewhere else.
That's true. You might have moved somewhere else. But you weren't hoping in the thing, especially if you have big arches and you've gone up in the next room, you know, then it's a problem. Yeah. By this arrangement, the world becomes... Okay. The conditioned souls who are residents of this material world are put in the womb of Mother Earth in the same way the seed of a child is put by the father in the womb of the mother. This conception of the Lord and the earth as father and mother is explained in Bhagavad Gita 14.4, quote, "It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father." Right, so the souls are coming from him, and the bodies that they will end up with are also coming from him. Right? Because in the primary creation, he is the one who designs all the forms and what they'll do. Then Brahma then makes that manifest for us, and then you have the specifics, right? So then, but it's still coming back to the Lord, because you can't have a species that the Lord didn't create. Someone could say, no, but in science they're doing all kinds of things. They call it, you know, crossbreeding and all these, but you can only crossbreed something that you can. So that means that crossbred entity is one of the species. It's just that only if someone does it, then you get it. Does that make sense? It's not that man's created mules. No, the mule is one of the 8,400,000 species. Just it's only manifest by crossing a horse and a pony or something, or a donkey. Or a donkey, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah? You know, because you can't, like, cross a, you know, how you say, a donkey and an aardvark, you know. Does that make sense? You know, then you get something that can carry loads for you, and then, you know, in the spare time they can go around and eat all the ants around your house and you don't have an ant problem. Right? Cross that with a cat, then your mouse problem is solved. Right, that. Cross that with a dog, then, you know, they can take care of all your, protection of the property and everything like that. Does that make sense? So you can't do these things. So man will think, I am doing this. But no, you can only do what's allowed. That's all. There's a limit to it. This conception of the Lord and the earth as father and mother is explained in Gita. Okay. Conditioned souls are devoted to the motherland in which they take their birth, but they do not know their father. You could say, no, but we're from a fatherland. That means you don't know your mother. That's even worse. Okay. The mother is not independent in producing children. Similarly, material nature cannot produce living creatures unless in contact with the Supreme Father, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us to offer obeisances unto the mother along with the father, the Supreme Lord, because it is the father only who impregnates the mother with all energies for the sustenance and maintenance of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. And so he's the source, and then material energy, then being invested with those potencies, and takes care of it. The sages continue their glorification. Do we understand here? Because they're bringing out this point. This is the main point, though it's making the point of the gravitation. But that's not the main point. That's just mentioned on the side. Because actually, it's Krishna's potency that creates the attraction. Right? Why the gravitation? Us and the earth. The point is how will there be an us or there'll be an earth unless there's gravitation between the atoms? Right? So Krishna already has to produce the attractive force between matter. That's what gravity is. So they say when the mass is big enough, then there's gravity. No, because the point is unless the atoms stick together, you don't have anything in the first place. Right? It's just so small they can't measure. But it's the Lord's potency that attracts everything together. So, the sages continue their glorification. Who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the universe by your energy. You have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation, right? Because it's all his energy. So whatever you see, it's all his energy. And there's amazing things going on. Right? Every aspect, if you look at it carefully, it's amazing. You know, it's like trees. They eat through their feet. Right? Who do you know that can do that? You know, maybe you have a friend who can pick something up with his feet and put it in his mouth, but it's still, you know what I'm saying? But they eat through their feet, every tree. It's not that some of them don't, you know, it's not that when you're not looking they reach over and pick something. Yeah, so. It's like, you know, the cows, they're all walking around on two legs. And then one of the cows says, there's a car coming, so down on 4 feet, you know, so they all get down, and then the car goes by, they all go back up. O Supreme Lord, undoubtedly you are inhabitants of the most pious planets, the Jhana, Tapas, and Satya Lokas. But still you have been purified by the drops of water sprinkled from your shoulder hairs by the shaking of your body. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Because only he can find the limit. We can never find the limit. Because we're limited. Right? But in touch with the unlimited, we take on that unlimited. We're able to appreciate the unlimited. But it's not that we can know the unlimited. Then who cares to know the unlimited? Does that make sense? By the Brahman platform, that's the unlimited. But we're not worried about that. We're worried about the person. Right. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. 43-45. Srila Prabhupada explains, ordinarily the body of a hog is considered impure, but one should not consider that the hog incarnation assumed by the Lord is also impure. The form of the Lord is the personified Vedas and is transcendental. The inhabitants of the Jhana, Tapas, and Satya Lokas are the most pious persons in the material world. But because those planets are situated in the material world, there are so many material impurities there also. Right? So even there on the topmost, there's still some impurity. Because the mode of goodness, it's still, the material mode of goodness means there has to be some passion and ignorance. Right? One could say, no, but why would that be? Why is somebody functioning in goodness in this material world?
Desiring the result.
What's the desire of the result? That's motive passion. Why would you even desire a result in the material world? That's motive ignorance. So it may be reduced greatly, but it's still present. So that's why even on these top planets, there will be some impurity. There must be.
So aspire to for motive goodness, it's never going to happen, actually.
No. I mean, it's because it's predominant, you call that a lifestyle in goodness or that. It's not that the Brahmin living out in the forest doesn't have some desire, you know. But it's in proportion to everything else, it's very minimal. So you don't notice it so much. You know what I'm saying? You know, like if the chapati is basically round, you're happy. You know, it's not that you roll out the chapati and then get out your compass and then get around and go here and all like this. And, you know. And then what do you do with the hole in the middle, right? I guess another way is roll it out really big and then take the thing and just cut them.
Yeah.
And pull them out. Could work. Therefore, when the drops of water from the tips of the Lord's shoulder hairs were sprinkled upon the bodies of the inhabitants of the higher planets, they felt purified. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, the sages said, lifting the earth is not astonishing for you, But it is astonishing for us that, on the pretext of the earth falling into the water, you have been merciful to us and made us successful by giving up the nectar of water touching your body, whose drops reach up to us. Right? Because he's on the bottom of the universe. And he's shaking, and it's going all the way to the top. You know, so that's a serious shake. So, dogs are nothing, right? How much can we describe your pastimes? So, in other words, that he lifts the earth, that's not the amazing thing. But that he's done it as a boar, and reciprocating with them, and purifying them by sprinkling them with the water that's coming off the tips of the hairs of his shoulders. That's amazing. So in other words, the Lord's pastimes with his devotees based on affection, that's amazing. The activities that he does as Paramatma and Brahman, those aren't so amazing. Right? If you say God did something wonderful, is that actually amazing? No.
It's his job.
Yeah, it's his job. Right? So that's not, he's pervading everything, he knows everything. That's not actually the amazing thing. The amazing thing is that the person who's doing that, he is only interested in interacting with the devotees. That's the amazing part. Is that? Yeah? How much can we describe your pastimes? Though we have knowledge, we do not know completely even a drop of the ocean of your pastimes. Others are more unfortunate. Right? Means they do not even know completely a drop of the ocean of the pastimes. And then there's others who are more unfortunate. Means they know nothing. He who thinks he knows the limits of activities of you, the unlimited, is foolish. The Lord says, quote, "Jivas bewildered by Maya may not know you, but my devotees beyond Maya, such as Narada, should know me." So they know what's revealed. Because the point is, even if you know anything, you know the Lord. The sages answer by saying that those in the spiritual realm are bewildered by Yoga Maya, and those in the material world are bewildered by ignorance, a mix of gunas, guna yoga. Your spiritual devotees are bewildered by Yoga Maya, since they are submerged in your sweetness. The others, material jivas, are bewildered, since they are submerged in material happiness and suffering. Thus, who can know the end of your activities? Right? So he's pointing out a point here, is even from another aspect, not even taking into consideration the smallness that we are. Then the material world, we're covered by the modes of nature, so we can never know Krishna, who's beyond the modes. In the spiritual world, you're covered by Yoga Maya, so again, you won't know. Therefore, bestow good fortune to us and let us know as much as we can. We should not be falsely proud of thinking we know everything about you. So how much we can, that's all that's important. You don't need to know more. Right? Does that make sense? Verses 46 to 50. Maitreya Muni offers benedictions. In verses 46 to 50, Maitreya Muni describes how the Lord placed the earth upon the water and returned to his abode. Sage Maitreya said, "The Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. In this manner, the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water, and having placed it afloat on the water, he returned to his own abode." 46-47. Srila Prabhupada explains the force behind gravity in his purport to verse 46. "The earth was placed on the water by his inconceivable potency. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore he can sustain the huge planets either on the water or in the air as he likes." Right? So it doesn't really matter to him. "The tiny human brain," because even you say, if it sinks in the water, but the point is it's still being held up by the water. Right? And even if it sits on the bottom of the water and the mud, but what's holding up that mud? So the point is the Lord is holding everything up how he pleases. The tiny human brain cannot conceive how these potencies of the Lord can act. Man can give some vague explanation of the laws by which such phenomena are made possible, but actually the tiny human brain is unable to conceive of the activities of the Lord, which are therefore called inconceivable. Yet the frog philosophers still try to give some imaginary explanation. Because they're saying it's very scientific, right? But they define how science works. So if I make the rules of the game, you know, how the rules are made, then, and I'm talking on that, okay, you're not following the rule of the game, is it technically objective?
No.
It's totally subjective, because the academic method was created by
academics.
So how is that objective? Right? They create their own system and then say whoever's not following this is subjective, and we're the only objective. That's the power of illusion. So that's what you're saying, these frog-like philosophers, they go on giving some imaginary explanation because they've observed something, right? But they really don't know what they're talking about. Because if they don't know the Lord, they really don't know what's happening. Yes?
So Krishna gives everybody system of worship him according to their position.
Yes.
And then we got this through Srila Prabhupada, so it appears that we should be happy because it's a perfect
system. Yes.
System.
Yes.
So somehow, even though it's perfect, but we find some fault in it.
Yes. That's because we're imperfect. In other words, someone who is on the perfectional platform won't find anything imperfect in perfection. But if we're not perfect, then we'll find imperfection.
Because this is the reflection of our own.
Yes, that's all.
Okay.
Like that. Because if you're dealing with illusion, you're dealing with your reflection.
Because everybody else is happy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the...
It's part of the science of gravity that the planets are held in orbit by ropes of wind?
You have that aspect also. So that, see, in other words, there's a gravitational force, but the thing is that may be managed by how you say, the gravity is there, otherwise whether there's wind or not, it's not going to function. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Because if nothing's held together, how do you get wind? Mm-hmm. Right? Wind, you have to have a certain volume of air held together that it can move as a body. Mm-hmm. But if that doesn't exist, you know what I'm saying?
So the scientists, they call that the weak force that holds the...
The weak?
Weak force. They can't... They don't know where it comes from, but the...
Weak. How do you spell weak? W-I-K?
No, D-A-K.
Huh?
W-E-A-K.
W-E-A-K. Weak as in it's weak. It's so weak, it's holding everything together. They call it weak. So what's the strong force? Their brain.
The repulsion.
Right?
The repulsion.
Yeah. Wait, sorry?
The repulsion between the things. But
the repulsion is the greater part. These guys really... So they're taking the darkness is the real thing and light is...
They know it's there. They can't quantify it. They say that there's something that keeps them together.
No, they can't quantify. They can't deal with time, space, or in other words, they can't deal with the Lord's energies, right? They deal on a smaller. Like, let's say I go into the kitchen, right, and I see that everything's in its place. Okay, so that's the kitchen. Then I come back later to the kitchen and I see things are moved. Right. So every day I come back. So I want to be scientific. I come back at the same time. And every day I find, you know, that, you know, there's this particular cup and small plate and spoon in the sink, in the particular sink. And so then I'll come up with things. I'll try to figure out what it is, what in the kitchen is creating the force that draws it from the cabinet. Because the cup is in one place, the saucer is another, the spoon's in another. And then they're all together and then they're in another place. And a fourth place, the sink. So then what is causing all this? You know, what's the weak force that is going on here? Or is it actually the strong force that at a particular time of the day, because there's the thing, how are these attracted to the sink? That's the weak force. But it may be, someone else comes up, it may be the strong force that at a particular time of the day, by certain influences, the cabinet and the drawer repulse the cup, the plate, and the spoon. You know, and then they end up in the sink because that's the only place where that strong force is the least. So somehow or another, maybe because of the what the, you know, so therefore I'll analyze what the cabinet's made out of, what the drawer, and they both seem to be, you know, because it's a, what do you call it, modular kitchen, they both seem to be made out of, you know, some kind of, you know, cheap ply and, you know, particle board and that with some kind of, what do you call it, vinyl finishing on it.
Laminate.
Yeah, laminate, yeah. So therefore, maybe that's what causes the strong force, and because the sink is made out of the metal and all that, therefore that's why the weak force is generated there. Or it could be because there's a hole in the sink and that makes it so the strong force can't manifest. You understand, like this? You could go on and write a whole thesis based on this. And as long as you can give, you go in there and over, you know, we studied this over, you know, so many years and that it happens every day, you know, and like that, and then we can put together. You know, that's the fun part. We laugh. But now we go into the university, and, you know, there's four, you know, peers sitting there looking very sober and very, like, very authoritative when the, you know, candidate walks into the room to defend his thesis. But it's the same process. It's the same, it's just as stupid. You know what I'm saying? So that's why we always say this so-called. We can say no, but they're intelligent. Yes, up to a point. You know, but what does that mean? You know, it's just like this. Did it take? In one sense, just looking at it from the, you know, the objective point of view, did it take intelligence for the kid to pull together all the things that he could get? You know, how you say, get his toboggan, get it to the top of the stairs. You know, get a whole bunch of things on top of it and push it off and have it go down to the bottom. And then when it hits the bottom, it makes noise and everything goes flying everywhere. Right? It took intelligence to figure out that that's happening. You know, so they understood the force of gravity. They understood, you know, the you know, what do you call it, the slipperiness of the toboggan would go down the stairs. You know, everything like that. Right? But at the same time is, now when the mom sees that, what does she say? You're stupid. Right? So you could say, so therefore, these frog-like philosophers in their own community are very intelligent. Right? Because another kid, he used the drawer. Right? But the drawer, because of the lip on the front and the back, it doesn't go down the stairs as well. So he has to put a lot of stuff in it to get it to go. But then sometimes it goes a couple of steps. And then it flips, and then it goes like that. Of course, that it also gets the job done and makes a lot more fun. But then there is a slight problem. That's when it does hit the bottom of the stairs, you know, where there's that turn, you know, then it does make a dent in the wall. And then you know, Mommy Denley has a tendency to notice these things, which is strange. But, you know, whatever it is, they seem to have this sixth sense, you know. Well, the toboggan just goes down and sits and hits the bottom where the, you know, the rug comes up the wall a little bit, and it hits there, so it leaves no mark. So then you can say this one's more intelligent. So amongst the community, then it's who's more intelligent. But when you step back to what is the whole purpose of the whole thing, then you're foolish. So, yes, no, okay, yes. Everyone's wondering why always frog-like philosophers. Well, here he doesn't even say frog-like. He just says frog philosophers. Maitreya Muni concluded his narration by describing the transcendental benefit of hearing the nectar of the Lord's pastimes. Quote, one hears and describes in a devotional service attitude this auspicious narration of Lord Bohr, which is worthy of description. The Lord, who is within the heart of everyone, is very pleased. Right? That's the process. Nothing remains unachieved when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with someone. By transcendental achievement, one understands everything else to be insignificant. One who engages in transcendental loving service is elevated to the highest perfectional stage by the Lord Himself, who is seated in everyone's heart. Right? That's why you don't have to necessarily get into so much technical explanation here. Because being written for the Paramahamsas, therefore, that's enough. Because they're not interested in anything else but the Lord. So if the Lord's involved, they're satisfied. But the commentaries and other things they have to address our mentality, which is not necessarily so, you know, how you say, paramahamsical or something. You know? So therefore, we need a little bit, we get more. And so the more we get, as we were discussing yesterday, the more scientific it gets. But, you know, in other words, the more we bring it down to Paramatma and Brahman, the more we're happy. Who, other than one who is not a human being, can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? So human beings would be interested. So if you're not interested, you're not human. Mm-hmm. Simple. Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the personality of Godhead's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? End quote. 48-50. In his purports to verse 48 and 50, Srila Prabhupada encourages us to take solace in hearing of transcendental topics of the Lord's sublime activities. Intelligent persons should therefore hear personally and cause others to hear the descriptive narrations of the Lord's activities, for that will destroy the pangs of material existence. Out of his causeless mercy only, the Lord comes to this earth and leaves behind his merciful activities so that the devotees may derive transcendental benefit. Becomes performs them. The devotees who are there, they take advantage, but because they remain behind, right? Therefore, then other devotees can take advantage. So they hear and they describe to others. Because one can say, what do you mean leave behind? But the point is Krishna being knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. When he goes, the pastime could disappear with him. But that it's still here for us to hear and chant about means the Lord has left it. Does that make sense? Because there has to be something there to talk about. So the pastime being non-different from him, talking about it, you get the benefit. Because if you didn't leave it behind, if you just talk, you don't really get any benefit from it. Right? No one has become enlightened by reading the tabloid The Sun. Right? Anybody, you've heard of anybody coming to transcendental realization? No? How about the Inquirer? No? How about the Huffington Post? No?
No.
Okay. Ring a bell? Yeah? Okay. Okay.
Most people only recognize the East Coast ones, that one's Pacific Northwest. So.
Oh, the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We come from Portland.
Me?
No, I'm saying the Huffington Post.
I think it does. Yeah.
You know what the motto is of Portland? Portland, Oregon. The city, official city motto. Keep it weird. They're weird. There are many books of stories and histories in the world, but except for the histories... Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. There are many books or stories and histories in the world, but except for the histories or narrations of the topics of the personality of Godhead, none are capable of diminishing the burden of material pangs. Therefore, one who is serious about eliminating material existence must chant and hear of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Because if you hear other things, it doesn't get rid of our material attachment. But if you hear about the Lord, that does. So we want to, with time, switch from one kind of hearing to the other. Like that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In his purport to verse 49, Srila Prabhupada describes the help the Lord offers to one with sincere motives. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 10:10, the Lord gives intelligence to the pure devotees so that they may be elevated to the highest perfectional stage. It is confirmed herein that a pure devotee who constantly engages in the loving service of the Lord is awarded all knowledge necessary to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what you need to get to that platform, Krishna gives. It's not that you need something more. So as we're sincere, as we make that endeavor, then he reveals. So what he's revealing, it's enough. It works. So what we know now is enough to work now. If we can apply that, then Krishna will reveal more. For such a devotee, there is nothing valuable to be achieved but the Lord's service. If one serves faithfully, there is no possibility of frustration because the Lord himself takes charge of the devotee's advancement. So, yeah. The Lord is seated in everyone's heart, and he knows the devotee's motive and arranges everything achievable. So if your motive is about him, it moves that way. If the motive is not about him, it moves the other way. Yes?
So we shouldn't worry about this thing. All we should worry is about practice, basically.
Yes. Yeah, how to practice, and that practice is to please Krishna. Yeah. And then automatically, yes. That's what Prabhupada means by automatic. We take it automatic means you do nothing. But there's nothing within our concept. Automatic that you do nothing, that's advertisement. Right? Because automatic, let's say you have the dishwasher. So you don't have to worry about the dishes after dinner. Then you can relax with the family. But how does that dishwasher work? Right? You have to take the dishes. You have to rinse them off first. Do they make a dishwasher you don't have to rinse at all?
No,
you have to rinse them first. Basically, it has to be clean already, basically. Right? And then you stick it into the washing machine. And then you close the door. And you have to put certain ones in certain things. You can't put anything anywhere. Right? You know, the plates won't fit in the place where all the spoons and forks go. You know, it's amazing that they don't. And, you know, and so in that, and then you fit it in there. And you can only fit in so much. So if you either you have a monster dishwasher machine, or you have to do a few loads, right? And so then once they come out, you still have to take them out, you know, dry them off, and put them on the shelf, unless they make ones now that dry them for you.
They do.
They make ones that dry them. Okay, so they cut out one step. Okay, but now for all that to happen, even you do all that, you still have to push the button. You still have to plug it in. You still have to pay for the electricity. You still have to pay for the water. And so what does that mean? You have to go to work. Right? So all they've done is switched it from having to work here to having to work there. Right? So the guy that doesn't have any of these things, with a part-time job, he gets by. The guy that has all the things, you know, you walk into the room and say, you know, turn on lights, or, you know, light the fire, or, you know, stuff like that, then you have to work more. Right? So instead of a part-time job, he has 1.5 jobs, right? And therefore, he has all that stuff, but he's not at home to enjoy it, so. Yes, okay.
This is what Srila Prabhupada calls over-intelligence.
This over-intelligence, yes. Because it's so intelligent, it doesn't even really do anything. Yeah, it's like, yeah, well, it's been, why do that? Or you overthink something. It doesn't need to be thought that much. You know, it's just like when you put the strawberries on the plate, do you have to line up all the little dots on the strawberries, you know, and stuff like that? No, that's overthinking. Right, so automatic means you perform the process, the result is automatic. So we'll say, no, I have to do it. But then what does that come back to? Us. Means why? I'm the controller, and therefore I get the result. So I am the controller, but I'm starting to appreciate, my enjoyment has to be shared with the Lord. Right? But when we are not the controller, not the enjoyer, therefore I do what pleases the Lord, then he, being pleased, gives the result. That's automatic. In other words, the pseudo devotee who is anxious to achieve material gains cannot attain the highest perfectional stage because the Lord is in knowledge of his motive. You're not going to pull one over on the Lord here. Right? One merely has to become sincere in his purpose, and then the Lord is there to help in every way. So sincere, so I think it was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur defined sincere as being free from karma and gyan. If your endeavor is free from karma and gyan, that's sincere. Right? Does that make sense? So we try to be as sincere as possible. Chapter 14. Yes.
How can that be applied in the chanting?
How can that be applied in the chanting? What is not understood? No, I catch that, but what is the doubt within the chanting that it would be hard to apply free from karma and jnana?
It's difficult sometimes to know
if
it's
on motives. No, but how much you can know of your motives, that's what you worry about. What you don't know, don't worry about. Because with time, if you apply what you know to the process, then those things that you don't know will start to manifest. And then you'll complain, oh, these weren't there before, there's something wrong with the process. No, it's like you're cleaning the mirror, you can see nothing in the mirror, and as you clean the mirror, you start to be able to see things. And then you're complaining that these things weren't there before. No. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, so you don't have to worry.
I'm just thinking sometimes, okay, I want to please Krishna with chanting, but I don't know really how, in what way.
To please.
Just can I really please him? It
means by hearing. Probably points out here.
That's all.
Sorry?
That's all?
The only thing worth knowing and desiring in the world is, you know, devotion to Krishna. That's all. You understand? Right, what else can you do? You know, this is not like, you know, patting your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time, jumping up and down and then calling mommy to see if she's seeing you doing this. You know, doing four things at once. That's not. It sounds too simple because we're used to complicating things. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You have water. It runs off into a drain. The drain runs out into this big drain in the street. It's gone. And if anything falls in the drain, you either pick it out or sweep it out, and it's done. Okay, right? Simple. It works. It's worked for, you know, thousands of years, you know, in great civilizations, and everybody's been happy with it. Then along comes complicated man. No, then you have to close it, you have to put the thing, you have to have the pipes, and you have to have inspection chambers and all that. So now if something gets in there, you have to take the whole thing apart to do it. It's not just a simple thing. You know, and the other thing, a kid could fix it. They just come along with a little broom, turn on the water and sweep it, it's done, right? A 5-year-old could do it, a 4-year-old could do it. Right? But now you have to call in a professional to do it. That's called complicated. So is it necessary? So we're used to that kind of thinking. So just here, it's kind of like, you know, where's the, come on, where's the seek, where's the, you know. It's just like this. Let's say you're talking to a friend. What's the most important thing in the conversation? Just to hear. You know, but can you do that without hearing? Yeah, it's just like, you can bring me, basically, just from being in India for so long, you can bring me anyone from any part of the world speaking any language, and I will know when to nod my head and make all the sounds so that they think they know what they're saying. You know, you live in India long enough, you work that out. You understand? So, therefore, it's the hearing that's actually the... Because even to do that, I have to be able to hear. You know, because there at some point, and they'll nod, you know, huh? So, yeah, you do all those things. Is that... Yeah. Okay? So the hearing part's the main thing. Then, from hearing, then you know what kind of face to make and, you know, stuff like that. You know, yeah, they did this. Yeah, the guy's a jerk, you know. But what if you didn't hear properly? Yeah. Yeah, so my husband, he did this way. Yeah, he's a jerk. Is it going to work? You have to hear, you know. You know, or this guy did this. Oh, that's nice. You know, it's not going to work out. You understand?
I think I'm underestimating
the hearing. The hearing, yeah. So, yeah. So we do it all day. It's just what we want to hear. Just like, you know, the latest gossip, you know, just happened. You want to hear it. You want to know the detail. You know, who did this, who did that, and who said this, and who said that, and, you know, all these different things, and whatever nuances can go with it so that we can understand more about it. But we want to hear all that. Right? So now we have to switch from that hearing to this hearing. Yes, sir. Does that make sense? Yeah. I was going to say, we have 2 minutes, but the clock's... Put it like this. Yeah, we're 5 minutes fast. Okay, so stop here and continue.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
yeah.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
yeah.
Jai Nitai Gaur Premananda.